Well, the next thing I was going to ask you, you know, everybody, when they think of stories, they think of characters, and most people have a rudimentary understanding of character development, but looking at the Gospel of Mark in terms of these people as characters, what can we leap off talking about in that regard?
Well, in literature, in archetypal literature, we talk about a story being about a moment that will never happen again. And that's certainly true here. So the people that Jesus met were given a chance to change. And I think before I get further on that, I think one of the beautiful things in Mark is what Jesus tells his disciples to do when they go to a house and they teach and the people are not convinced. And I love that he teaches them not to turn around and stab them, or not to turn around and gossip about them, but to shake the dust from your sandals and leave the dust as evidence and move on. And that is exactly the radical notion of an eye for an eye doesn't work. So Jesus understood that there would be people who would have a chance to change, but didn't. And of course, the main person who has a chance to change but doesn't is Judas. And the fascinating thing is Mark's lack of speculation about why Judas does not take the opportunity to change, even though we must figure he knew as well as any of them leprosy was cured, fits were cured, unclean spirits were brought out, all sorts of illness, physical changes were made, and we don't know why Judas chooses not to change, but he chooses not to change, and he would rather have... So again, we have to figure out why did he not change, and the thing we can conclude is that the materialism of this world was a better deal to Judas. The money that he would receive was a better deal than the promise of something that he couldn't touch and couldn't squeeze in his hands. And so Judas doesn't change. And he does worse than not change. He betrays Jesus for money.
And, you know, this idea of... this is something that I think can be really beneficial to anybody listening now. In some ways, we're so familiar with all of these characters within the Gospels. They're so domesticated to us. We know who Judas is, blah, 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 blah. That if you stop and read Mark, like, we're being introduced to all of these characters. And like you said, in every story, from the page that they're introduced, they have the chance to go either way.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, Judas becomes a very living figure to think about, but also to judge us. Oh, you know, how am I like all of these apostles? You know, because we all think about them, you know, either Judas, you know, damned, or we think about like, oh, all these apostles, they have their big statues up in St. Peter's. But when we encounter them, they're just fishermen, right? When we first see them, they're just guys. The women are just women. What are they going to do? And if you can get that sort of, you know, re-naivety of like finding these people for the first time when you're reading through Mark, I think you'll end up being stunned by how Mark, just with little touches, shows us this growth of all of these figures in these very strange ways. But you can't let them be too familiar. That's, to me, that's a tip that I would say, you know, from your class, but from all that I've learned, even if you're reading a text for the eighth time, to be able in some way to at least feign meeting those characters again, wherever they show up for the first time on the page, is very important. And helpful in understanding what someone like Mark was trying to do with his gospel.
Well, if we think about trying to recreate within ourselves the state of bafflement of never having heard a message like what Jesus said, then we can, that's why Mark tells the story the way he does. He's trying to put us back into the state of the community before it had ever heard Jesus's message. And that's why he has structured it the way he has, to put you back into an emotional and psychological state of sorting things out and making a choice.
And, you know, this bafflement, and, you know, I always talk about wonder and awe, right? And if there's a gospel that's all about wonder, awe, bafflement, it's Mark. For instance, the easy one to point out is everybody's confused about who Jesus is except the demons, right? Mm-hmm. The demons are the only... But see, this is what's great about this. Everybody goes, why do the demons know and no one else does? And there's all sorts of theories. But in regard to what you said, I think it's very important to notice the demons are not baffled by Jesus, but they're also the ones that have no chance of changing. Mm-hmm. The only people that can change for the good just as much as the bad are the people who are continually baffled by Jesus. And this persists to the end, where the women get there and he's gone. And you get a sense that he said this before, but they were still afraid. Mm-hmm. But we see that, and I think sometimes, and there's one whole theory about this, that like why Mark did that is he's talking to the persecuted church of Rome, and he's basically saying, are you going to, you know, run off and be scared and not say the gospel? I like it thinking to say they were still capable of change because even then they were baffled and awestruck. And that wonder, that ability to have that is the indication that we are beings with free will who the story isn't done with us yet.
I think that's why... the story of Peter is important. You know, you will deny me. You will deny me, and no, I won't. And he keeps having to get back to that position. I think of it on a seesaw, like, which way are you going? Which way are you going? And it's not in this gospel, but Thomas is having to touch the wound, mm-hmm. of course.
And, you know, when we think about all of these people as characters in a plot, you know, that starts to be something that then we can read back in ourselves. And I mean that, you know, there's a way in which rightfully people go, you know, sometimes we want our lives to be like, you know, the movies. And so when they're far more Kadoshian, then we realize, you know, it's like, oh, actually most of my life is spent, you know, doing laundry and not fighting, you know, bad guys or something. But there's another way in which it's exactly Christianity and the Gospels that have said you're a character in this overarching story that an author is telling, and the author's God himself. But even, you know, you've written books, right? I think any good author will tell you the author himself, there's a way in which the characters take on a life of their own. And so to see the sort of analogs between reading a gospel like a story and seeing our lives as a greater story, I don't think that's accidental. I think that's part and parcel of what Christianity saw as the great adventure that is being a human with this kind of God who would become human like us and join our story.
Mm-hmm.